We have hope. Hope that things will get better. And they will. Especially since you're listening to Rule the Galaxy podcast.
Hey, Star Wars fans and Rule the Galaxy fans. It is Joe. Sorry if you're watching on YouTube or Twitter right now. You just saw me checking my phone because some of the other guys are leaving me messages and I'm trying to watch that and watch the screen at the same time. But as usual, thanks for following. Thanks for listening. We're at 257, episode 257 right now. So thanks for always following along and being a part of what we do. And tonight we have a very special guest. One of my favorite authors, a gentleman who has written some books that mean a lot to me. And if you're watching on YouTube right now, to him right there, one of my favorites in Kenobi and the new one, The Living Force, Mr. John Jackson Miller. John, thank you so much for being a part of the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well. Speaking before we got on here, we both had crazy weeks so far. So I'm glad.
Any week before a Star Wars book is a crazy week, but this one's busy.
Well, I will tell you, I've really enjoyed your updates that you've been doing, the countdown character by character. So that thanks for doing that online and keeping us all up to date. And we feel just truly blessed and so excited. I mean, last week we had Claudia Gray, who we think has done some good, great Star Wars books. You've done some great Star Wars books. So we just feel like top of the world to feel like our podcast can talk to you great authors. So we'll just jump right in if that's okay. I know I sent over some questions and we've got some limited time here on things, but I know you started off doing things with the comics retailer and comics buyer guide, back in the day before you started into writing the novels and everything like that. What was that kind of the impetus for you to get into writing, was doing work on that, or were there other things that prompted you into becoming a writer?
Well, no, I go way back. I mean, my mother was a grade school librarian and so she encouraged reading. She was also a movie fan. She encouraged me to watch movies, and took me to a lot of them, including Star Wars, among others. And it's always been something I was interested in, something I was doing. I was a comics fan, so I was drawing my own comics and writing my own comics and all of that. As you mentioned, Comics Buyer's Guide, that was a weekly newspaper that ran almost 1,700 issues from like 1971 to 2013, I think it was. I went to work there 30 years ago at this point, and editing for that and writing for that, and also editing a trade magazine for the comics industry called Comics Retailer. And that's where, I had a journalism degree, among other things. I had been writing on the nonfiction side of things. I'd been writing about these things. I wrote about Star Wars comics. I wrote about Star Wars card games, because I edited a magazine called Scry, which was the card game magazine for like Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
And so all of that kind of thing. And so I got to know people with Star Wars, Star Trek, these various other franchises, and of course at Marvel and various other publishers. And so I got in at Marvel in 2003, wrote a comic series based on a villain of Iron Man's called the Crimson Dynamo, and then that led to a year on Iron Man, and that led to me working with Dark Horse Comics almost 20 years ago now, starting work. I did basically a a single issue tryout, and then that led to me getting the Knights of the Old Republic comic series, and mm-hmm. that lasted a good 5 years. So, and then the novels come after that.
Awesome, awesome. That's a wild and varied background right there. So that's awesome. And I think, you know, just looking at my notes here, one of the things that I don't think gets enough credit is, and I know it's off script, so I apologize, but the Lost Tribe of the Sith series.
Yeah.
I was very intrigued by that. And it's been a while since I've read through that and everything like that, but those were very enjoyable. You know, it was kind of in a different realm, a different era, and you could kind of be free to do what you wanted to do to a certain extent, right? And
I had a sandbox to be able to write in, because it was a planet that nobody was ever going to visit for 5,000 years, and so I just had to make sure that I was wrapped up long before Luke Skywalker got there, and indeed we were. That was nine stories plus a comic series, You know, that book is on its 20th printing. It is the little engine that could.
Wow. I think I still got the guide, the compendium guide to that in the comic right here behind me. If we had more time, I would go searching and people could see my balding head in the screen, but we'll bypass that. All I know is it was a lot of fun and I appreciate you writing that. When it comes to your writing, do you have a process you go through? I mean, is it more of, hey, here's an idea I've got for you, Lucasfilm, Star Wars, or whatever series? Or do people come to you more often than not with an idea and you fill in the blanks and start going?
Well, in licensed fiction and comics, they pretty much come to you and say, we'd like you to propose something. And and then you either have very strict guidelines as to what you want to do or what they want you to do, or it's fairly loose. So, an example of a graphic novel that I had come out earlier this year called Skull and Bones, which is for the Ubisoft pirate ship game. That was something where they were very specific. We want to actually, showcase our game. We want to showcase various parts of the gameplay. And we want there to be a character that sort of is like the player character.
Right.
I had my freedom, me and my co-author, James Mishler, we went through the catalog of everything they had and we said, okay, we're going to use this faction leader and that faction leader. And we're going to, the story was mostly ours. But there were guiding principles at the beginning that we were kind of following. And then likewise with the Living Force, it was suggested to me, they wanted a Jedi Council novel. And then I had the notion of what I would do. And that is pretty much 99.9% from there, me and my editor, Tom Holler, coming up with what we were doing. There are cases where, you can, once you're established, go there and say, hey, I have this idea.
Right.
And that was the case with Kenobi. But again, it was something that was not totally unsolicited, because Dark Horse had said, we'd like to maybe do a graphic novel, an original graphic novel for the 30th anniversary of Star Wars. And I proposed what ended up being the novel, except I proposed it as a comic book. And we couldn't do it then. And I shelved the idea and came back to it 6 years later.
Okay. Wow. Brent on our show always talks about the movie process and how something can be an idea and get shelved and then come back years later or reworked. And I didn't even think about it being that way in either the comic or the novel world.
Yeah. But
that's kind of interesting to hear on that. So I'm guessing your Star Wars fandom started like mine in 77, right? I mean, is that where you kind of got hooked? And did Kenobi, I know with writing the book and so forth, did he stand out then as a character that you got attached to, or was there any other character in the Star Wars fandom that you were really drawn to?
At 9 years old, I was just into the whole thing. So I tended to focus more on the characters that I actually was able to get the action figures for. In the beginning, I had Darth Vader, R2-D2, and a C-3PO that had a broken leg. Actually, he had a fused leg, but my father broke the leg so that it would actually swing, and he put a pin in it. So nice. I have this Obi-Wan Kenobi that does this kick dancing thing like a Rockette. Obi-Wan Kenobi, a C-3PO.
Yeah.
One of those things. I was always confused at the time. I said, Obi-Wan Kenobi, that sounds like a droid's name. That I didn't quite get what they were doing with that. But yeah, I mean, certainly as the years went on, I realized, okay, Obi-Wan Kenobi is a character that has this history that we haven't seen. There was an issue of the Marvel comic series in 1979, issue 24, that spotlighted him. And right there, silent drifting.
Yep.
And much of that material is inoperative currently, but that's all right. I like the idea that you could fill in the blanks on these things with these characters.
I agree, and I selfishly, while I'm sitting there, I was like, I'm going to find that Lost Tribes of the Sith. Yeah, well, I'll find it later. That's okay.
Well, I think I actually have up here the Lost Tribe of the Sith cover on the wall. So
there we go. See, you've taken care of my work for me. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Is there, in the work you've done for Star Wars, is there a favorite work that you've done? And we'll get to Living Force. Living Force might be the answer. But up until now, has there been a favorite either book or comic or part of Star Wars you've been involved with that stands out to you?
It's hard to play favorites. I mean, obviously Kenobi is my most famous novel. Knights of the Old Republic is my most famous comic series. I'll do little projects like I did a novella for episode 8 in the Canto Bight collection mm-hmm. that they did called The Ride. And it was this story where it was just about, you know, four of the background characters in the casino, one of whom is a card player with a system who has one night to make a million credits. And the three little green guys that you see in the movie that, you know, take all the money away from him. And I wrote this story, which is just a wild ride with them. And, you know, I suppose it could have been written not just for, or not necessarily in Star Wars, but in something else too. Or in a different franchise, but it felt more like a Star Wars thing, and it felt fun, and it is just the sort of thing where, you know, I was able to let the sense of humor that I bring to my stories. I try to have some comedy in every story. That one was lots of comedy. So it was one of those things. And in The Living Force, there are some definite laughs in this book, I think. So
I agree. We'll get to it in a second, because I want to cover lots of stuff you did before that. But I will say there's a lot of character involvement where you see and it draws a laugh just on the way the character either has something to say or how they react, and seeing how uncomfortable some of them are in the situations they're in, which I really liked. Before we get to that, is there a fandom outside of Star Wars? I know you've done some Star Trek books, but is that the fandom you think you'd lean towards, like outside of Star Wars, or are there other fandoms that stand out to you as like your favorite?
Oh, there's a variety. I mean, you know, Star Trek, obviously that's something that I've written, you know, 8 novels in now. And that's where I write a certain kind of story, because you can't really write a science fiction story where science is the major element in Star Wars, because it's just not something we do. We don't really get into why things work. You just assume that they do, and when they don't, we kick it,
right?
Or we let R2 fix it, and that's how that goes. But I mean, obviously that's a big one. But no, I mean, I've got, you know Marvel Comics, DC Comics, a variety of other franchises that I was into, and then you know, I just have, you know, as a collector, a lot of peculiar things that I've got something like 1,200 TV guides, and so I just happened to be reading through the TV guide from the week of May 21st. 1977 last night, and that's the week obviously that Star Wars came out. and the preceding week. And it's just interesting to me, the Sunday, not the Sunday before Star Wars, but a week and a half before Star Wars, NBC had a big event called Billion Dollar Movies, where they did a thing about the top 12 movies, which together had made $1 billion. And so Jaws was number one. And then we got Gone with the Wind and all these others there. And it's just amusing looking at that ad for that, because uh-huh. you're saying, okay, this will last here for maybe a week before we're going to have to change the listings. And you know, I'll see things that I saw the Saturday night before Star Wars came out. There was a horror TV show pilot on NBC that I never knew what it was until years later, and it's actually on YouTube, and I realized that's what it is. It was a pilot for a TV series called Spectre, which was kind of an X-Files or with magic in it kind of a thing, that Gene Roddenberry produced. Nice. And Majel Barrett is in it, as you would expect. So, and I'm like, wow, I saw that on TV, and that was Star Wars week. I didn't realize that. So I'm amused by that. I'm amused by the fact that the night that the movie debuted in many cities on the 25th, that was the night that had the very last new episode of the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Oh my gosh.
If you couldn't get to see the movie, that's what you had on TV.
That's fantastic. You talking about TV guides made me go right to thinking about the Seinfeld episode. Where Costanza's dad has the collection there. So
the hardcore collectors don't just want the week, they want the particular city.
Oh man. See, I wouldn't even have thought of that. That's awesome. Well,
there's 190 editions of these things. So there you go.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, depending on the year.
Oh wow. Okay. See, yeah. I'm learning new stuff. It's like I'm watching Jeopardy right now.
Well, no,
John Jackson Miller. So
I'm lucky to be in the area where one of the rarest versions came out, and that's the Northern Wisconsin edition. So all the ones we find here are there.
So before we, I know I'm trying to watch the clock and make sure I get it's everything in here. So one of the things I've noticed a lot on your social media, and it seems like there's a complete circuit of this, and we've been lucky enough to interview people who are doing this, whether it's Vanessa Marshall or Nika Futterman or Emily Swallow recently, the convention circuit, the you seem to be having a lot of fun with that. Is it as fun as you make it appear to be? And do you find some really cool things happen to you and are you know, just mind blowing? Like when you're sitting there and all these fans are coming up and you're meeting these other people who are in the Star Wars universe, how enjoyable are they? Cause I only go to a few, I can't jump around all those things, but it seems like you have a great time and really get some good out of those.
I've kind of rediscovered it. You know, I started going back, you know, when I was a teenager in the 80s, I just went back for something like the 23rd time to my hometown convention in Memphis, which is called Mid-South Con. And again, it is just sort of surreal to, you know, be attending and speaking and signing at an event that I used to, you know, wander around as a kid. I think certainly in my business, going back to the magazines I worked for, you know, I was getting to go to San Diego and things like that as part of the job. And that was really kind of cool. I kind of have rediscovered it, you know, particularly after the pandemic. I kind of said, you know, I'm going to try to go as often as I can because is feasible, because I do enjoy talking to folks. I do enjoy that interaction. And, you know, I just remember that terrible day, March 1st, 2020, when we were at the last day on Sunday at GalaxyCon Richmond. And we were looking around saying, are we ever going to be able to do this again? And you know, then it was another year and a half. So there you go.
And I'm going to talk to you about Kenobi real quick and The Living Force, obviously, because we want to talk about that. But does it just sit there and it's got to warm your heart when you're sitting there and people come up and say, Kenobi was my favorite book, or I love the Knight Errant, or I love New Dawn, you know, how that was the first step in the new Disney Lucasfilm book era and all that. I mean, you got to pinch yourself sometimes and think, I'm this lucky to have people making a big deal to come see me about these things.
You know, it is fun. It's good to be attached to these things. I mean, one of the things you trade when you're doing tie-ins is, you know, you're not necessarily getting the movie rights and everything that you would normally get if you're writing your own book. But you get that connection to the, you know, the larger franchise and the exposure that brings. And people are able to, you know, sort of plug into what you're doing as part of their overall fandom of other things. So I definitely do enjoy it. You know, it's always just a challenge because whatever my schedule is set for conventions and my schedule for writing is not necessarily come up with at the same time.
Right.
And so these things have to be balanced out.
No. Well, while you were talking, you see one of our regular co-hosts, Brent Dykeman, is joining us here. Brent is, as usual, working on some of his Star Wars Legion, dioramas that he's making for the game and everything like that. Brent, John, at one point in time, was writing for a magazine that was all with the card playing universe. And you, what are the recent cards you've been into at Star Wars?
So what game were you writing for? Was it Destiny? Was it way back when? Like how long ago are we talking?
Well, no, he's talking about collectible card games. I was the editor of Scry magazine. So that was the magazine that Magic the Gathering and the Star Wars CCG were advertised in and other stuff. And then I did role-playing stuff a little bit for Wizards of the Coast.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So all like ever since I've gotten into this wargaming stuff, those are all names that I've heard. And it's funny that they're Scry because that's the mechanic in Magic the Gathering.
Yeah. It was our word first, but we both got it from somewhere else.
Sure. Right. So and I only learned that word and that mechanic, I don't know, maybe a month ago. So there's a Star Wars new card game called Star Wars Unlimited. So essentially, people who played the other one from FFG that I just mentioned. Anyways, I can't even think of the name of it right now. Destiny. That's right, the one with Destiny where you roll dice and stuff like that. They say it plays a lot. They think reminds them of that game. It reminds me a lot of Magic the Gathering. There's two lanes. You can play space cards. You can play ground-based vehicles. So there's two lanes where you can attack. Space really only attacks space, and ground only attacks ground, unless there's some like wombo combo type stuff you can do. And it's really, really flavored for the Star Wars world. One of my favorite cards is I Am Your Father's, the title of the card. It is a Darth Vader. So the villainy plays it. And either it deals 7 damage to a unit, or if I say no, the Vader person draws 3 cards. So you can can say no, or you can say no, like you want to.
Well, these days I mostly play Star Realms, but I just saw that I think they got a Star Trek license for that. So we'll see what else they get. I don't know.
Is that like the ship based game? Is it a ship based flying game?
It's Star Realms is one on one common deck. Card game.
So like a deck build. It's still like a deck game. Yeah. So this is deck building. It's a trading card game. So they throw those collectibles into it.
Jack up the price.
I just opened up. Well, so I bought a Boba Fett and I sold it for $50. Some of the cards, if you open them up, there is a special showcase leader, which is the major chase card, right? And that thing, if you open the Boba Fett chase card, he's gonna pull one out.
So I wrote the book on
absolutely
prices for these
absolutely
things.
Right.
There we go.
So this one just
just the card games that existed in 2003. So
right.
I mean,
and so this one
800 pages.
And so you're probably going to add another 200 pages.
Not me.
Star Wars. Well,
yeah, I'm out.
Correct. But so this one, I think it just launched sometime in March. Okay. So it's literally been out. It's already going out of print, not out of print, but like they overprinted. They like were like, hey, like we plan to sell a lot, and they're already through the allotment that they printed. So it's going to dry up. However, they've spent time developing this game. Just like Magic, they drop sets. They're going to drop 3 sets a year. The first one in March, the second one in July, and then the third one in November. The second one, they've already kind of teaser trailered. It's got Mandalorian, Grogu, Moff Gideon, Dark Troopers, Moff Gideon's light cruiser, and all of those have light combos with them. And then the third set is when they get into the Clone Wars, and they're going to drop Clone Wars stuff with that. So obviously you can pick. But I was going to get into that showcase. That showcase one right now, if you go online, for Boba Fett is like $700. People are willing to pay $700 for that card. Well, because it's Boba Fett. So
all this money that Joe won't spend or won't get into. John, I'm gonna switch gears, and because I don't want to keep you too long, we're gonna get into the Living Force to finish up. But I will first say, I don't have an actual hard copy of A New Dawn because I bought it audio. It was one of the first books I got audio only, and I just listen to it, you know, like once a year, and I love A New Dawn. And again, you know, thanks for doing that, because I felt like, you know, a lot of people look at it and go, man, the title is just like a double meaning, right? It's a new dawn of what's going on, but it's also a new dawn in the Lucasfilm Star Wars. So, or Disney Star Wars. So thank you for that. This one, you know, Kenobi is my guy. And when I got this book, it is something I reread, you know, once a year. And I mean, it's just one of my favorites. So thank you for doing that. And one time I'm going to meet you up at a convention or whatever and have you sign that, because it's near and dear to my heart. But let's jump into the Living Force, because you guys were kind enough to give me the digital copy. And then I'm finishing up on the hard copy here. I'm going to throw my 2 cents in first and just say, you know, being an original trilogy guy. Oh, go ahead, Brent.
Have you lifted the embargo? Are we breaking rules here?
No, we can talk about it, right?
Okay. I mean,
we just can't give away spoilers, right, John?
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is a non-spoiler one because we're live.
Yeah, we're not spoiler. I was just going to give an overall like.
No, you're good. It's coming up though. Like, it's like next week.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It'll be out on Tuesday the 9th, right? Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So
continue. Sorry.
No, I was not going to go into any spoilers whatsoever. I know the rules. I don't want to get in trouble. I want to have John back someday. The only way I can do that is not breaking the rules.
Sure.
But what I will say is, being an original trilogy guy and then watching my son grow up with the prequels and living it through his eyes, you know, I re-fell in love with these characters just like I was in love with the original trilogy characters. But I think what you've done so well in The Living Force is, I think we all wanted to know more about that council. We all wanted to know more of who they were, their personalities, what was it, you know, what was going through their mind. And I think you did in this book such a great job. How many years before Phantom Menace is this?
It's 1 year.
1 year. Okay. 1 year before. So obviously we're getting ready to go into some major things. I have like a couple chapters left of this book, but so I kind of wanted to talk to you and then hit the end and see how it finishes on me. But I just think you made it personal. And I think that's a big thing, because so many Star Wars fans will look back at the prequels and say, oh, wow, we had a lot of potential with all these different characters that we saw briefly. And we didn't get to know them except for either when they were sitting in a chair or when they got killed off in Revenge of the Sith, right? And so for me, going through this book and seeing the relationships and their backgrounds and the ways they felt about things was incredible. Give me you know, kind of the 30,000-foot view of your thoughts on what you did there with the Living Force.
Well, I wanted to give the characters something to do. Something important that was meaningful. And, that's not always easy, because you say, well, I'll send them to a diplomatic retreat or something and they'll get attacked and that'll be whatever. You want to actually have it mean something. And so I pretty much, when I was offered the book, my next email was, I know exactly what I want to do. I want to have Qui-Gon Jinn walk into the Jedi Council chamber and say, you guys really need to get out of this room. I'm not on the council for a good reason, and one of them is that you sit here. you sit here, you look out the window. It's nice. You know, every so often somebody comes in, you make them feel uncomfortable, and then they leave. You know, why don't you actually go out and see if you can actually help somebody? That is, in a nutshell, the challenge that he offers. This is not a spoiler because it's on the back cover.
Yeah.
And you know, Mace Windu says, okay, you're on. And you know, they go to a planet that is depicted, you know, physically in the book, which is kind of cool because we have the mm-hmm. map that is in black and white in every edition.
Yep.
And then we have the Barnes & Noble special edition, which has a lovely poster on one side. And then on the other side, it's got the color version of the map, which is kind of cool. And it is a particular planet that represents both the high point of the Jedi and what is certainly approaching a lower point, which is that, you know, they had all these great works back in the High Republic era, back when things were good. And, you know, now because of the corruption in the Republic, nepotism and intrigue and the Emperor and all the stuff going on, you know, things are starting to go wrong. And in particular, there's this one place that they all remember going to and mm-hmm. that they played a role in rescuing years ago. And they feel that place has been left behind. That is a large part of the story, and how the Jedi interact with the people they find there, how the Jedi interact with one another, because, you know, I don't just have the 12 go individually out. I you know, sometimes there's a buddy cop story that's going on. You know, that's how that works. And then I have a significant threat, you know, a villain, you know, a menace that is out there waiting for the Jedi to make a mistake. You know, I even get to put in some stuff that I really dig, you know, about the Republic Navy and how, you mm-hmm. know, how its origins came to be. So all of these things are in there, plus Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, yep. And just a lot of humor.
I won't spoil it, but I love the touch point on Empire Strikes Back in the mm-hmm. book. People will notice that there are some High Republic touch points in there, obviously. I think those are great. I think one of the characters that stood out to me so much in there was Ki-Adi Mundi. I think, you know, we only see certain points of him, and he's very straightforward, to the point, you know, in the movies, and to see him interact socially, I think, was one of those enjoyable things. You mentioned some laughs in there, and I would sit there and be like, huh, he's very awkward and uncomfortable right now. That's pretty funny.
Well, I mean, you know, what I do is I kind of look at these characters and what we know about them, and I see, well, okay, well, how do we make life hard for them? Mm-hmm. How do we make them uncomfortable? And then we have the interactions between characters, and we realize that we're not, you know, seeing these characters, even though we are seeing the first conversations between some of these characters, sure. in printed form. Obviously, they've known each other for years, and so you want to have the feeling in this book that these people have been arguing for a long time, or debating for a long time, or friends for a long time, or whatever. So, you know, Ki-Adi, you know, has an arc where he's traveling with Uriel Poof, and
yes,
you know, Uriel's whole deal is he's 300, 400, 700, however old he is, he's just past it. He doesn't care anymore. He's bored and he's trying to entertain himself. And if that means by making, you know, Ki-Adi Mundi uncomfortable every so often, or whatever, he will. And of course, Ki-Adi is like, I know what you're doing. Stop. Stop. I'm just not going to listen. And you know, then you get characters that are just as old as, you know, Uriel is, like Apo Rancisis, where he's like,
yes.
Okay, yeah, I you have changed, and not for the better, you know. I remember you a long time ago, and this is and that's the kind of the way that friends are and coworkers are, who have known each other for a long time. And you know, we get that kind of dynamic for characters that haven't really necessarily, you know, worked together for as long a time, like Yoda and Adi Gallia, mm-hmm. where it's really clear that, you know, her youth and energy is being not taken advantage of, but Yoda is definitely leaning on her to do a lot of stuff.
Yes,
and she's volunteering to do a lot of stuff. And the problem right now with the Jedi is they're doing too much stuff on Coruscant. They need to actually be, if there's a way they can delegate some of the political stuff somewhere else, that would be great.
It's amazing because as you read it, you do start seeing the conniving and things going in the background that are leading to. So you did a great job of making it see. No wonder certain things fell in the future because they were so tied up in all these things that they thought, you know, were taking up so much of their time. I think one of the other things is they all were told by Qui-Gon to go and do something or interact and, you know, do something good. And it came down to sometimes they would just do something nice for someone in an individual little basis. And, yeah. and they were like, see, even that small little act of kindness or small little act of help was the thing you needed to go out and do in society, right? Instead of sitting in that room and looking out those windows. So I thought that was well played.
And you know, the Jedi are not all, you know, unified necessarily in their reactions to these things. Mm-hmm. I Sazy Tin, his opinion is kind of like, yeah, we've got people for that. it's really not our job to go out and do the individual connections. We've done that. We used to do that. That was, right. This is what the Knights are for. This is what everybody is for. And there's something to that. I mean, I remember there was an episode of The West Wing where your President Bartlett goes to try to help the tornado victims and he won't leave. And they say, okay, you actually need to go because it's not, you've got people for this.
Right. Right.
And this is kind of, you know, one of the cool things about having the 12 masters is they can have different views about what the Jedi's job is or what a Jedi should be doing. And even so, they all, you know, kind of, I think, get something out of this trip.
I agree. I think of nothing else with Phantom Menace coming back out on May 3rd or May 4th this year, right? If listeners, viewers right now of the show, check out this book in enough time to get done to go see the movie, you're going to see little sparks in your mind to remind you of the way these characters are outside of the little bits you see them in Phantom Menace. And right. It's going to open you up a little bit to say, these are better characters than maybe that snippet of them just in the council room that you see. So I really look forward to people kind of reading this, coming back to that and saying, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, and you have a little more depth. So, I really enjoyed it. I know Brent hasn't read it yet. I know the crew hasn't read it yet. Obviously I was fortunate enough, like I said, to be able to do that. And I wanted to make sure I actually sat there and said, I don't want to see the end until I've spoken with you. I kind of want to get right up to it and then go, okay, now I'm going to go buzz through the end of it and be like, oh man, that's an awesome ending, whatever.
It's really like terrible that everybody got hit by a bus in chapter 60.
Oh, come on.
No.
go ahead, Brent.
So what did you use as your research and your influence for this story? And did you create the island? Was the island given to you?
Oh,
some of the back of that you can talk about or what you can't talk about, I get. But like, what was some of your research and influence?
I looked up basically every canon appearance that I could find with the counselors, but then also I read a lot of the earlier ones too, so that, you know, there are characters who, you know, might not necessarily have the exact, backstories that they had back in the Dark Horse comics.
Yeah.
The stories should rhyme. They should feel like, you know, they connect somewhat. excuse me. In the case of the planet Quen, the planet existed, but the surface didn't. We didn't know what was there, and so that was a case where, you know, I was able to actually build this archipelago, and you know, craft it to my needs. And, we got to the end of it and I said, well, you know, I've got the map. Let's run the map. And then we, you know, got the map in every edition. And then I said, well, I've also got it, you know, I can make it bigger in color. And so we got the Barnes and Noble edition. I had just done a book for Strange New Worlds for Star Trek called The High Country, which was the first Star Trek novel with planetary maps. And so I had gotten a little used to that. I think people like that interdisciplinary stuff, you know, Lost Tribe of the Sith maps. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was one of the cool thing about it.
So did the map influence the story or did the story influence the map? And how fun is it to create an environment?
One of the things that I do is when I have a thing like that going on, I'll have a dry erase board with the locations on magnets or on index cards on magnets. So I'm constantly moving things around saying, okay, nice. These two places need to be near each other. These places don't. This is east of this. This is west of this.
Nice.
I got to keep that stuff straight. The story is what drives everything. And I'll say, okay, this place is got to be more remote than the other place. And so I'll make sure that that is programmed onto whatever, you know, my brain is, geographically. But then what I'll do is I can look at the end and as I'm sweeping back through it, I can add some color there. World building is a thing that obviously a lot of people in science fiction and fantasy do. I almost never start with the world. Okay. I start with the story. The story tells me what the world looks like. Unless it's something where the world is already established, as in the case of the Kenobi novel, where mm-hmm. there was a map of Tatooine, and so in that case, I'm actually playing with their map and I'm crafting my story around that's there. Okay, let's do that.
love it. Well, I know you mentioned we had some time stuff here, so I don't want to keep you too long. Is there anything else that maybe we didn't cover or anything you'd like to promote? I know we've got the book coming out on the 9th. All real retailers, you know, everybody go get the Living Force by John Jackson Miller, however you want to get it, audio, hard copy, you know, whoever you're going to buy it through, whatever makes John the most money, make sure you buy it that way. John, what are some things you want to promote and hit?
Okay, we have since we're live at this point, and I guess we're going audio tomorrow.
Yes.
I have a little book tour here in Wisconsin, so we have a live book event at the Barnes & Noble in Appleton, Wisconsin. Tuesday night, the 9th at 6 p.m.
Nice.
Costume contest and stuff at 5:30. And then on that following Saturday, so the 13th, at 1 p.m., I'm at the Barnes & Noble Westtown in Madison, Wisconsin. At 6 p.m., I run over to the one in Mayfair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And then I've got the C2E2 at the end of April. That's travel for April. But otherwise, new books coming out, obviously, the Living Force hardcover audiobook and ebook, the audiobook I'm looking forward to listening to, cause that's by Mark Thompson.
Yes.
The Barnes & Noble special edition is a cool one. Again, cause it's got the posters, any edition, and there's still time to do this. Any one of these editions, if you upload your receipt to readstarwars.com/preorderTheLivingForce before April 16th, I think it is, you will get a signed book plate mailed to you from Random House. Two other Star Wars releases I have coming out in May. The very first Star Wars comic I mentioned from Dark Horse,
mm-hmm.
That comes out in Marvel's Star Wars Legends, The Rebellion, Volume 2 Omnibus.
Okay.
That comes out in the middle of May. The week after that, the most in-demand comic I've got, or graphic novel I've got, comes back out again. That is the Epic Collection for Old Republic Volume 1. That is Knights of the Old Republic, the first third of that book.
Okay.
That came out in 2015, went through two printings, and those books are like 300 hours now.
Wow.
Well, that's being reprinted in reprinted. It's coming out the third week of May. And so people will be able to get it for just the regular price, which will be great. The New Dawn, which you mentioned, is coming out in a trade paperback edition with a fresh cover. This is what they're doing kind of with the other sort of airport sized books. Or mass market paperbacks. And then finally, just out this week, that the Star Trek Strange New Worlds novel is out in trade paperback.
Wow. A busy, busy man.
Seriously, you're knocking them out of the park, man.
Well, I'm not even
time
done.
To breathe?
I'm not even done, but yeah, I got to quit.
No, you got it. Well, one, As I stated, some of your books are some of my favorites. So thank you for what you've done. Even the ones, you know, like we didn't talk that much about the Lost Tribe of the Sith and other things that go along with these novels. Thank you for what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. As always, in the future, if you have another book coming out that you feel like you want to promote, we would love to have you on and let you discuss it. I know we barely spend any time on Living Force, but I would say you covered it pretty well, and you can tell I really enjoyed it.
Oh,
and
very good.
I would promote it to anybody. I just thought it was a really fun book to get you ready for the prequels coming back out again. So keep all your social media going, because I tell you, it's fun watching you on there as well. I hope everything keeps going well in the family and the life and everything, because I know you're busy, but go right ahead. You were going to say.
Yeah, something. I was going to say, people can find my notes on all my stories, or almost all of them. So there's an essay on all the Lost Tribe of the Sith stories, for example. All of these things are on farawaypress.com. That's my website. There's a huge essay on Kenobi, a huge essay on New Dawn. The essay on Living Force is going to be a long time in coming, I promise you. I'm not anywhere close to doing that yet. Okay. But then on my socials, JJM Faraway on Twitter, and then John Jackson Miller on just about everything else.
You got it. You got it. Well, you, sir, are one of our favorites. We appreciate this. Your second time on the show with us. So thank you very much. Thanks for the time. Again, tell your staff there, thanks for helping me set this up. And anytime you want to come back, you are always welcome, because we're all big fans of yours. And we had Mark Thompson on a couple months ago, and I told him about your upcoming book. And I was like, man, it'd be great if you were doing the audio version. And he just sat there and rolled his eyes and looked away. And we were like, oh, okay, well, he's not saying anything. So when you said that, I was like, yes, because we love Mark Thompson. He's great. So,
oh, very good.
But go have a great evening. Get everything caught up. Thanks for your time. And we will talk to you very soon. Thank you for the copy. And I'll keep promoting it to everybody.
All right. May the force be with you.
You as well. Thanks.
And also with you. It's kind of religious of us, and also with you.
It was. I felt like we were in church. Like we should be shaking hands right now. When are we going for the bread and wine?
That's what I mean, you're getting awfully close to breaking that embargo. I mean, worried about it.
No, March 26th was when we could start talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was like April 12th is when you could
start. No, the book comes out April 9th, and they said we can start giving general reviews March 26th. And I did see our good friend Vanessa Marshall put out a nice little thing promoting it and saying how much she liked the book as well. So, yeah, we're allowed to talk in generalities. Sure. We just can't give things away. But I would, you know, really.
Spoiler alert, it's about the Clone Wars era.
Well, it's about the prequel era. So there you go. It's
sorry, right there. Prequel. Before,
yeah.
Yeah. It's prior to the Clone Wars. It's 1 year prior to Phantom Menace. I listened.
There you go. So for everybody who's listening, we'll take a quick, you know, pause and everything, because I think Alfie and D-Doc will be here in a moment.